There is some interesting medrash that speaks about Noach in quite a negative way. It's not such a famous medrash. I saw it. Reb Chaim Friedlander speaks extensively about it. We know as Noach is tzaddik, but it speaks in various places, various midrashim. We find that Noach is looked as in quite a negative eyes. Truth is that even the Pasuk speaks about Noach being Isha Adoma. Pasuk also doesn't speak to him. Of course, at the beginning of the Seder, Pasuk tells us Noach ish tzaddik hoya, but later on he speaks about V'yachal Noach Isha Adoma, and he was looked as a mundane person. What's pshat in it? Surely he was a great tzaddik. And even when the Torah speaks about him being a tzaddik, we know the famously the first Rashi of the Seder says Noach ish tzaddik hoya b'deyoysav, and even that's quite critical. But the Yosef does he mean in a positive way or perhaps not such a positive way? In his generation he was great, but in others he wouldn't have stood out. And we find that he wasn't perhaps such a great person, and surely that needs to be understood. So Reb Chaim Friedlander says at the moment again, very, very important point. He says that there's a very essential difference between Noach and Avraham Avinu. We all pride ourselves to be descendants of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu being one of the first of the three Ovos, Mekovos to the Shechina, his foundation, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Klal Yisrael is based on Avraham Avinu, but we don't pride ourselves to be Bnei Noach. On the contrary, Bnei Noach, that's not referring to us, generally speaking. So what is exactly the point? Why is Avraham Avinu so great and Noach not? What is the key difference? The answer is that Avraham Avinu was also living in a rotten generation, but the difference between Avraham Avinu was that Avraham Avinu managed to not just to perfect his own ways, but he also changed people around him as well. We know that Noach was able to transform a whole generation into the Pasuk tells us, that's how the interpretation of Chazal, he had V'yas and his Nefesh, he made lots of Gerim, he put lots of Yidin Tachas, made lots of people gerim and bring them on the Kanfei Ashkenoi. He made lots of gerim. He was the prototype of chesed, as we know, kindness, and he was bringing loads of people into his tent, teaching them Torah. The Chazal teaches so much about the chesed that he did and how much he was able to influence on others. Noach was busy building for hundreds of years. He was busy building his teva, years and years and years. But who ultimately entered the teva? Noach, his wife, his three sons, and their wives. So okay, so he didn't fall out with his sons, and he didn't fall out with his daughters-in-law, which is quite great. But besides that, nobody else entered the teva. Nobody else entered the teva out of hundreds or thousands of people around him. He was unable to influence, and however great tzaddik he was unable to influence others to join him in the avodas Hashem and to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Here's the difference between Avraham Avinu. We pride ourselves to be the sense of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was able to influence his understanding and the beauty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways. He was able to influence that and infuse into others. But Noach failed there. He saw it, but he wasn't able to give it over to others. He was just on his own. And he stood and he entered the teva, just him, his wife, and his children, his closest relative. Only there he was able to influence Hashem's ways, not beyond that. And that's a failure on his side. And that's why Avraham Avinu was so great and Noach perhaps not as great. Because he wasn't able to give over what he had and however strong he was in his own understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he wasn't able to give that to others. And that is a failure. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had commanded him, do it, build a teva be'etzem hayom hazeh, build it in the middle of the streets and make it as public as you can and publicize it and make sure that people... But he didn't go beyond that. He wasn't able to actually do it. He wasn't able to influence others. And that's what he felt. That's what we are proud to be Bnei Avraham, but not Bnei Noach. The message, the obvious message from that is that sometimes we fail to realize that. We sometimes feel that we have it in us, but we have to realize that we have got an obligation also to give, to share with others and to give to others. Times when we feel that, you know, it's good enough if I do it properly, but we fail to realize, at times we fail to realize how much others look at us and how much we have an obligation within our own society. And that's what Avraham Avinu is teaching us as opposed to Noach. The obligation and duty, the responsibility towards the tzibur around us. This was what I saw in Reb Chaim Friedlander. I think it's a very important word. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so you're saying that he also didn't have a full success rate. So you say, yeah, the assumption is they were just as bad, yeah. Okay, you know what? The point probably is that he didn't have any success. He had absolutely no success besides his own home. And that's quite striking. There was nobody that joined him. Nobody. It must have been some people that were not as bad. He had no success whatsoever in publicizing Hashem. No success at all. When I was a bocha, I used to hang around a little bit. Can't consider myself to have been very close. But a little bit I hanged around by Don Segal. Don Segal is one of my famous mashkichim in Eretz Yisrael. You must remember he was in Bnei Brak, Yerushalayim. And Don Segal, a tremendous mashpia, a Talmud of Reb Chatzkel and of Avshach. And I remember that once I used to daven sometimes by him, and you go to his shmuzin a lot. I remember that once something that probably influenced, that gave me a more of a, it's tremendous. I remember that once he went, it's loosely related to this point, but it's about what ultimately a person influences is not where you expect it to be. Because I walked past his flat once. He lived in Kushmonim, a flat on the top floor. And I walked once past it. I don't remember what the reason is, but I remember walking past, and the door was closed, and everything was it was in his private. But I remember that as I was walking past, I was learning Torah so sweetly, and it was in his completely private. He wasn't like an official shir, official chabur, official anything. He was on his own learning Torah at home, and that sweetness of him learning Torah loud and clear, geschmack, which was heard even outside his flat. I think that probably was influenced more than other things, because when you see that something is genuine, that's really when the influence is. And we sometimes underestimate how much we give out to others, and that's really ultimately where we influence others and what our obligation towards others is. Okay, this was just a thought with regards to Noach and Avraham Avinu. Okay, let's continue where we're holding in Meleches Losh. I think perhaps a good point is we discussed yesterday extensively the difference between the gibul, the two types of gibul, blilo rako, blilo kasha. We spoke about something being bar gibul or not. We spoke about the difference if something is fine. Yeah, you want to say something?
I had a thought, but I carry on.
Okay. Okay.
Well, there are some things in the Rashi, the Rav was saying how something which becomes a dough.
Yep.
Is a bar gibble, and something which won't become a dough is mushy. But there are things which are intrinsically sticky, like flour is intrinsically sticky. Chavetz Chaim talked about Mishmura, talked about Pesach time, people would use flour as glue.
Yeah, sure.
It closes up because of the gluten in it.
Mm-hmm.
And certain things are not, and they're completely and totally. What's the word when you don't absorb water?
Porous.
Yeah, non-porous. They're completely non-porous, like sand. Sand, even if you were to grind it down to be even finer than flour, like even finer than solus, because it's like glass, it's completely non-porous. You couldn't do anything with it. You couldn't make it into a dough.
Right.
Does that come into it at all? Nothing to do with how fine it is, but whether or not it will stick. I can imagine you could get lentils.
I suppose, yes. I think it probably has to do with it as well. If something ultimately will not become a flower the way we define a flower, then I think the answer is yes, you're right. And it's intrinsically something which is not about gibble. I think so, you're probably right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, so we need to learn a little bit more on this. We will cover some of it tonight. Okay. You're saying. Okay, but that's Tchina. You're saying Tchina, we're talking about Losh. Does it make a difference the fact that it was grand before in terms of kneading, in terms of Losh?
Is there Losh after Losh?
Is there Losh after Losh? The fact that it went through a kneading process, does that make it the fact that there is no rule of Ein Losh of achalosh. Why takanot? Let's think about it. Why takanot? Why is it en toichen acha toichen en bishlach abishol? But yesh losh achalosh. Any explanation in it? Yeah, so perhaps that's the sort of what we're going to be seeing now. So let's see. Okay, let's learn a bit more. Siv Tezvav speaks about chardol, which is mustard. Now, mustard, Shulchan Aruch tells us, Tezvav, bottom line of page Kufnun. Chardol, mustard, shaloshu me'erev Shabbos, which was kneaded before Shabbos. Would you call it kneading? Is that a chiddush or is that self-understood? That mustard, does anybody make mustard? Does anybody know how to make mustard?
It involves grinding.
Grinding. Because what? Why is it grinding?
Because you've got the seeds and you're going to make them into a paste and then you add various...
You're making a paste. Okay, so that's kneading. And that's... There is also a toichen element, which was discussed earlier. Here we're talking about the kneading aspect. Why is there kneading? With other ingredients, and some of them are liquid. So now you're actually kneading it, and that's how you produce mustard. Chardol shelosh me'erev Shabbos, mustard which people kneaded before Shabbos. Lemochoy, once it did go through kneading, lemochoy yochol le'arvoy, you can stir it on Shabbos. So there was a kneading before Shabbos. So therefore, you can stir it on Shabbos. Hem biyad, whether you're doing it with your hand. Hem bekliyah, whether you're actually using a keli for that. So if it was done before Shabbos, you can redo it on Shabbos. Which probably reminds us of what you're asking, actually, is that yes, if they went through a kneading process before Shabbos, to stir it again, because what's the word? On Shabbos, you want to just stir it again? What's that? Because it's... Separated, is that the word? It's separated a little bit before on Shabbos. So you can, yeah, perhaps. Yochal ha'ova en biyad en bekli. And not only that, v'noyz sein le'soichoy dvash. You want to make it a bit more sweet and a bit more tasty. So you may add on Shabbos the honey. You can do that. But lo yitroif le'ovoy bekoyach. This is a spelling mistake here. As per the understanding of the Mishnah Berurah, Sifkot Nun Tes, this is not bekach, but it's bekoyach. Lo yitroif le'ovoy bekoyach. Yes, you may stir it gently on Shabbos, if you needed it before Shabbos. You may gently stir it on Shabbos. Not only that, you may do it with your hand, you may do it with a keli, you may add some honey, but lo yitrof le'ovoy bekoyach. But if you want to mamash, go through it again properly, that will be also. Elo ma'arvoy me'at ma'at, but do it gently and slowly. If you're adding honey, just do it gently a little bit at a time and not pardon. No, that would be fine as well. Yes, that would also be fine. Mishnah Berurah Sifkot Nun Ches, b'mayim or b'yayin. Whatever you're adding is fine. What is the reason for it? What is the reason for it? Why is it fine? So there is an interesting Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah says in Sifkot Nun Ches over here, the reason is over here that we go with one opinion. And the reason is because the alidei anesin lo yichoshiv lishal adezu ad sheigablo. The Mishnah Berurah says that we go over here, we're influenced with the opinion that holds that just adding a liquid, that is not considered gibul. Only once you properly mix it. So this is an additional svar over here, that just by adding a liquid, you're not, remember we spoke about machlokas rishonim, by adding liquid as to whether over on lisha or not. Here, just by adding water, you're not going to be transgressing. And while you're ma'av later gently, that's also not considered a problem. And therefore, we are making over here that if you have done the kneading before Shabbos, just to add gently a bit of liquid, and not properly, not physically properly stirring, but just gently stirring it, that will be mutter if you're doing it ma'at ma'at. Siv tezayin in Shulchan Aruch. Shachalayim. Per shachalayim ba'av v'itako l'sha uvelas krishin. If you have shechalayim, which is a kind of mixture and a kind of food, which is called shechalayim in Arabic, And in different languages, it's called kishin, which I'm not sure exactly what this is. It's probably quite similar to mustard. It's a fruit which has various ingredients. Shadochan erev Shabbos. Lemochon noisin yain v'choim. It's on Shabbos. You may add wine or vinegar. V'lo yitroif elam ha'arev. Here you may not do it forcefully, but you may gently stir it on Shabbos, because as earlier, if before Shabbos you've done the main process of kneading, then just to add a bit of liquid on Shabbos is mutter. V'chein shum shedochem erev Shabbos, garlic as well, if they've been ground before Shabbos, lemochon noisin pilvu v'grisin, you're allowed to add beans on it on Shabbos, for leitoref elam ha'arev, but don't do it with force. And the aside here again is, if it has been ground or net, if you went through the kneading before Shabbos, and the actual food item is prepared already, all you want to do is add a little bit of something, that would be mutter on Shabbos. So some say that if you need to stir it again on Shabbos, you must do it with your hand and not with a spoon, in order to make a shinui. Some say that you're allowed to add a bit of liquid to the mustard. That's only if it's been done before Shabbos. Some hold that you're never allowed to add a liquid on Shabbos into the mustard, or with the ground, garlic. You're never allowed to add on Shabbos mishum losh, because you are making losh. So here, Rabbeisai, we've got a machloikas that we mentioned in previous shir. If you add liquid, just to add liquid, is that an issa or not? Is that issa kneading? Are you over on losh by adding liquid or not? We mentioned that the earlier opinion was that yes, by adding liquid, you're over on losh. Some say no, by adding liquid, you're not sufficient, you're not doing any kneading. And the issa losh is only if you actually physically mix. And this machlokes that was mentioned earlier is now mentioned physically in Shulchan Aruch. And the Yesh Omim say that, so therefore, if you're adding just a bit of liquid into your mustard, you're actually going to be over on losh. The first opinion said, no, you're not even on losh, because you're not kneading yet. And adding liquid is not a problem. And the second opinion said, no, the adding of liquid, that's a problem already. And you have to ensure to do it all before Shabbos. And to finish off the Rama over here, if you're first putting the liquid and then adding the solid afterward, that's mutter. We have here a kula, which is quite widespread and universal kula, that if you want to make a lisha, the way to do it in a permitted way is that you first, how would you normally do it? You normally have the vinegar. You want to add water now. And that's what's potentially problematic. But what about if you first have the liquid there and you want to add the solid? That is, according to Ramo, that's considered a very significant shinui. And if you're doing it with a significant shinui, then Melech's Losh doesn't apply. So, we have a kolavi in the Ramo. Again, Rabbi Yisai, if you do it in a non-regular way, normally you add the liquid later and the solid previously. If you change the order around, that's considered a very significant shinui, which according to the Mishnah, according to Shulchan Aruch, will make it into a heter. And therefore, that's applicable. When do we apply this heter? Can you think of an example that we change the order and therefore make it mutter?
The
Yeah?
Egg salad,
very good. Yes, very good.
Tuna
mayonnaise, that's a very common one. How would you normally do it? On weekdays?
Tuna and then the mayonnaise.
That's right. You first do the tuna, then you add the mayonnaise. We're learning now that if you don't want to do losh, the best way to do it, and you want to do it on Shabbos, the best way to do it is?
Reverse
the order. You do the mayonnaise, and then you add the tuna.
And
is that, we'll speak about the pardon?
They're both solid.
Mayonnaise is considered a liquid. Because anything... Well, it depends on your mayonnaise.
It's upside down, it's not going to come out.
Okay, that we're talking about. It must do. It must be a liquidy kind of mayonnaise. You're right.
If you've got a solid mayonnaise,
then you're right. If it's a solid mayonnaise that will not pour over naturally, you're right. You're right. It must be something which is influenced by gravity. Do I sound quite physical? Physically knowledgeable. Yeah. It's something which the Mechazanish says, that is something which is possible to be ma'arem ekli lekli. So that's, you're right. So we're assuming that it's a quite a liquidy kind of mayonnaise. Rabbi Isai, I'm going to finish off with the question of the coffee. How allowed to make coffee on Shabbos? And how and why?
You're allowed to make coffee on Shabbos.
Absolutely, I agree. Why? Why? Exactly.
Yeah.
We need to have a coffee.
So,
yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Why? How? So how? Why is there no loss? You've got over here coffee granules, and you're adding water to it. That's very much a shiloh of loss. Why is it different than the isurim over here? That you've got something which is solid, and you're adding water, and you're mixing to it. You're mixing it, and then you have got a. Why is it not considered meleches losh? Yes, it's not also the rice, it's not also medrabonon. In fact, it's mutter. And in fact, according to some poskim, it's a mitzvah. So why is it mutter to do it?
The Rav gave the answer
last. Oh, very good. I'm just going over that. Absolutely. What's the answer?
Because it's a liquid.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what Chaznish, Shlem Zaman, and other poskim say. I'm just going over the point we made yesterday, just a different scenario. That if you're creating something which is an absolute liquid, a complete liquid, it doesn't enter the shaila and the melacha of losh. And here, this is a very beautiful example, because otherwise it would be. If you're making a semi-liquidy kind of something, you would be losh. But the chiddush of the achronim is that if you're creating something which is completely liquid, totally liquid and watery, that will never enter the melach of losh. So you don't have to try, you don't have to reverse the order, you don't have to do a shinui. No, this is not losh, because you're creating an absolute liquid. Okay, this is for this evening. We'll continue with Sif Yud Zayin Be'ezer Hashem on Sunday. I wish you a good Shabbos.